Welcome to Momentum Magnet, a podcast to inspire your growth. I'm Karen Morales, and your host in helping you find ways to make positive changes for your business, health, relationships, and life. We always have a path to a happier ending, so let's get started today. Good afternoon, friends. Happy Friday. The COVID lockdown continues, and it's really hard for me to even find the words right now to discuss what's happening. How unsteady the world really feels in this moment today. Our health, wealth, survival, equality, education, access, job security, fear, friendship, loneliness. They're all issues that are plaguing us at once. And I've often discussed in the past that when life has given me huge U-turns, challenges thrown my way, I've always thought that it was a gateway to someplace better. So today, in midst of all this chaos, that's what we're here to talk about. We're going to talk about how you can find your center during crisis, no matter what chaos is happening outside of you, in the world, or the communities in which you live. Well, in my home this week, I talk about calmly discussing things versus reacting in our home. But when one of my kids interrupts my fifth Zoom call and screams for the 100th time, it's really easy for me to not embody that action and to lose my mind. So in my view, being spiritual is more than being a state of mind. It's about how you can act during crisis. So to have this conversation, I thought that I would invite my longtime friend, Jess Tardy, to join me. To say that Jess has an interesting past and an maybe original perspective is a serious understatement. So Jess, she's like a professional seeker. She left Maine at 18 and walked the halls at Harvard. And then she became a signed singer in the honky-tonks of Nashville. From there, she became a creative director making ads in Boston, a senior writer for a presidential nominee. And as of late, she became a chaplain back in her home state of Maine. She's a storyteller, a singer, a cancer survivor, and an all-around wise human who I'm happy to share with you today. Jess, welcome.
Thank you so much, Karen. Thanks for having me. And, you know, thanks for saying what you said to start the show. Right. And so if we're going to talk about ways of nurturing calm and finding center in times of crisis, it's really important to start by acknowledging what's awful that's right in front of you. You know, what's inhuman, what's unjust right in front of you, right? It's the only way to have any hope of really finding any center or healing or forward momentum even, you know, is to look at what's hard and horrible right in front of you. You know, so I'm glad for this opportunity to talk with you today, even on this really heavy day, although I might disagree with the wise part of my bio in that nice intro. Full disclosure, everybody, I tried to get out of this interview because everything is so overwhelming right now that I don't feel wise, right? I don't feel wise. I feel a little overwhelmed by everything. And, you know, spiritual overwhelm, that's real, and it happens, especially to chaplains and ministers. Like we're just like everybody else, we're kind of working through all this stuff. So, you know, I'm glad to be here, but, just with a little asterisk of like, I don't feel all that wise right now. I just know some things that have helped in other times of crisis. For me, my perspective, and you know, some things that help kind of manage these really hard times and taking struggles and turning them into, you know, something of spiritual value. That's a really personal process for everyone. So, you know, try and speak as wisely as I can.
That is a beautiful place to start. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that we're all struggling. And I think that that is an important lesson for all of us to hear and a piece of information to hold on to that even the woke, even the spiritual teachers around us can all get to a point where they want to say, uncle, it's too much. The amount of pathos and negative news surrounding us sometimes feels insurmountable. I think that neither of us have lived in this time before. This is one of the most unprecedented moments in global history where many, many issues are coming together and causing us to live in a state of almost perpetual fear and chaos. And in this time, it is almost more important to do what you said, to actually face the challenges in front of us and find a way to keep going. So given all of the twists and turns that you've personally felt faced in your life and what's happening on the global scale right now, can you just start by talking a little bit about how we try to find that sense of spirituality or centering or peace, whatever feels right for you to call it, when you're having a particularly challenging life moment?
Sure. Well, so, I mean, I really think that first step truly is naming and owning and facing what is in between you and connection, feeling connected to something greater than yourself. You know, whether you're a believer or a non-believer, an agnostic, you know, I think for me personally, spirituality is a way in which I seek a feeling of calm and connection to something bigger than myself. Everyone has a different idea of what spirituality means. To me, it's a way of walking through the world. But I definitely don't always walk that walk because there are bills to pay and, you know, to-do lists to do. And, you know, I think it's important to look at what gets in between you and feeling connected. What makes you feel separate and disconnected? What makes you feel alone or uncertain or you know, hungry in some ways? And, you know, it's funny, I think there's this tendency sometimes in new age circles and wellness circles and even in entrepreneurial circles, right, to use the language of mindset almost as a weapon against ourselves, right? That kind of thing of, if things aren't going right for you, if you can't find your bliss, it's probably your mindset, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, mindset is obviously important and powerful, but you cannot fast forward or just delete reality. You know, that's denial when you do it to yourself. And when you deny other people their experiences, even maybe just by being someone who is a bright sider, you know, oh, well, on the bright side, right? Or I'm seeing it today all over the place on Facebook, this, you know, well, maybe, quote unquote, these people should peacefully protest. There's a lot that's wrong with that statement, so many ways. But that is a form of, you know, spiritual bypassing, right? And that's not helpful to anyone. It's not helpful if you do it to yourself. It's not helpful when you do it to, you know, someone in your neighborhood or in your life or, you know, in the human family here. And I think, you know, when it comes to navigating crisis and change, this dance of continually kind of coming back to center, you're never always going to be centered, right? It really starts with getting right down and being brave enough to get into that, the heart of conflict and discomfort and kind of the muck, right? If you can't name it, if you can't face it or acknowledge it, you're never going to get past it, right? So if you're listening today and you're overwhelmed, you're freaked out, you're angry, you're traumatized, it might not just be your mindset, right? It might be everything. You know, it might not just be that you're too distracted or too caught up in, you know, climbing a ladder or, you know, waiting for some guy to text you or whatever. It might be that, you know, you're not all that bad at manifesting. You know, it could be, have nothing to do with you not reading The Secret, right? Or not having the right yoga mat or the right pose, right? That's all just kind of external kind of excuses. Like, there are also all these other cultural and political and economic systems at play that are real hurdles to connection and feeling spiritually whole and feeling centered, right? It's not just you. And for some people, those hurdles are so much greater, right? I already have a much easier time. Right? I've got white privilege, economic privilege, heteronormative privilege. There aren't as many hurdles for me. It's still really hard, but there's a whole bunch of layers that I don't have to think about or deal with on a day-to-day basis. That's privilege, right? So I think, let's see, I'm rambling a little bit here, but...
No, I think you said something that really struck me that I haven't heard explained in those simple terms. I think you are giving people the permission to really feel the big, ugly feelings when they need to. And that it is part of the process of finding your center to not avoid the pain that we inevitably face.
Yes, that's it, right? You have to kind of, you know, I resent that I'm saying this phrase, but at some point you do have to lean into it. You have to surrender to it. You know, and that's something I had to learn through a cancer experience. There was really no avoiding it or controlling the experience. So I had to just face it. Right. And there is something really freeing in that too, because it opens up. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to pretend things are different than they are. You know, it's like when the road runner is up in midair and his legs are kind of still spinning around. Like, that's a lot of work. Right. And it's a lot of work to stay in one place. And sometimes you just have to go down for the count and you have to let something rock you. You have to let it really, really rock you and sit with it and sit with that pain. You know, that's what interested me in becoming a chaplain after all these other careers is being able to sit with people and just sit next to them and with them in their pain and in their grief to help them really feel that moment. And when you feel it, then you can hopefully move through it.
That is beautiful. Both of us have walked kind of winding health journeys. So that really resonates with me. You faced cancer in, you know, an earlier part of your life stage, not, you know, in the era that most people expect that a diagnosis like that would come through. I faced a diagnosis of muscular dystrophy when I was in college, so barely 20. And I think in those moments of time, when you're facing a really hard diagnosis or a hard piece of news, you can do one of two things. You can bury your head in the sand and pretend that it's not happening. I was guilty of that for a long time, pretending that everything's okay. Or you can really lean into the pain, and some people end up getting stuck there. So I think the interesting point that you're bringing up that is very translatable to what's happening today is, how do you actually balance feeling something that does feel unfair or limiting or sad or too much? And how do you ensure that you don't get stuck with that feeling for too long?
Good question. You know, I think I've kind of accepted with, you know, living with cancer, that it's always going to be a little bit of a pendulum between kind of feelings and a relationship to the story. There are many, many days where I'm like, actually feel grateful for what cancer has taught me and the things that it's opened my eyes to. And the way that kind of gave me this permission slip to just truly, you know, I hate to say it, but follow my bliss, because I had this sense of mortality. And then there are also days where I think, wow, this really sucks and has really screwed up my plans and my expectations. And I'm mad about it. And, you know, all the stuff that comes with grief, right? I'm feeling grief around it, and it's a process, right? So I think it's about just kind of understanding that it's not this linear thing that a thing happened and then you get over it and you moved on. Just don't think anything is linear like that. So, you know, what I'm learning 6 years out from my diagnosis now is that things will come around, right? I feel great. It might come back around that I don't feel great about what happened. Or, you know, today I feel really stuck and cheated, and it's going to come back around that I feel grateful. So it's just kind of having a little patience and you know, it's a loaded word, but having faith that things will come back around, right? And maybe every time it gets a little bit easier to kind of have that faith that you'll feel a little bit different. And it's a cliche, but, you know, time is a good healer. And stuff just takes more time than you think it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think giving yourself the permission that sometimes those feelings will never go away.
Yeah.
I mean, I that really resonates with me. I mean, I've been fighting my diagnosis, and I use the word fighting on purpose because it's almost been an assault campaign that I've been waging on this idea that my mobility could be taken away from me. And I know earlier during COVID, about 5 weeks ago, I tripped just, you know, in the house on a rug that moved. And I broke both of my feet. And I tore or injured my MCL. And I felt such despair in that moment. Mm-hmm. It was almost as if I was back years prior dealing with it all over again. But I think the thing that you brought up that really caught me was there is a lot of discussion in the world about, you know, manifestation and the power of positivity. And I'm definitely one of Poly Positivity's founding members, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I think in those moments, sometimes I question whether I've sort of lost my path when I do have those days that I'm excessively down about a situation, whether it's cancer or muscular dystrophy, that most people would understand rightfully. You have a right to be mad right. When you're facing something that big and heavy. But I think the interesting thing that you said was, it doesn't mean that you don't have a strong mindset if you have those moments of despair. It's more that in those moments of despair, you have that hope and that kernel of truth that you know you will get through it and there will be a better moment in the future. But sitting there in the pain, I do believe, and I have experienced myself, I think sometimes helps you get to that next step more easily, even though it may be a bit counterintuitive.
I mean, that's been my experience is that the faster way for me to wind right back up in a heap, right, is to be like, no, I'm fine. You know, Glennon Doyle, who's amazing mm-hmm. writer and teacher, you know, she talks about sort of the pain we do, the pain we inflict upon ourselves with saying I'm fine. And you know, if you can acknowledge that you're not fine, and look at that and sit with that. You know, I think it's a, for me anyway, it's been, more conducive to actually moving forward, than saying, you know, to say I'm not fine, than to say everything's cool. Nothing to see here.
You know, it's different.
Kind of carry on.
It's different when you flip that switch. I know when my life fell apart about 2 years ago, I stopped saying I was fine, and it was my mantra for decades.
Yeah.
So now when somebody asks me the question on a day that's tough, I'll give them the real answer. And it's funny to see how uncomfortable that can make people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's like Nora McInerney. She has a podcast, Terrible, Thanks for Asking. And she's really done this amazing job of really calling attention to that exact phenomenon. Like, there's this expectation when someone says, how's it going, to say it's fine. But if you really want to connect with someone, and I think spirituality is really just this, you know, searching for connection. I really think connection starts with being able to ask someone, you know, how's it going? And them actually being able to tell you, not good. And here's why. Right? Of course, we're busy. We don't always have time for this. But, you know, in some of our closest relationships, you know, we should, right, have that ability to say, you know what, it's not good. I'm not fine.
How do you balance that idea of being so honest about your present moment state of mind with this larger idea that our vibe attracts our reality? So if you believe in that story of manifestation, that you want to try to walk away from feelings that are negative and choose higher vibration ones.
So I don't know that I would say I want to walk away from negative feelings. I think it's like your feelings are all there all the time. And there are always going to be things that make you angry or sad or guilty or whatnot. I don't think as long as you're, you know, breathing and walking around, I don't think there's any freedom from negative feelings. If someone knows how to do that, let me know. I'll sign up for that seminar. But I think it's like weather, you know, it's like the emotional weather. You've got it. You've got a weather system. So I think it's just about kind of transforming, letting them teach you what's really going on, right? If you're angry, that can be this sign that you need something to change. If you're jealous, it could be this sign that you are longing for something. You know, if you're lonely, right there, let them kind of be little signals for you to be like, oh, I need to change this. I need to move this way, right? So move them from this really active state where they're not necessarily helping you into, you know, kind of turning them into something of value. Yeah.
That's beautiful. I like that because I think I judged my feelings for a long time, for many years, you know, wanting to feel like I was a person that could espouse positivity. And I agree with you, by having a day or a night or a week where you really let yourself feel down, it often is a transformative experience for me that gets me to a place where I feel better or I'm ready to make a change that will enable me to get those good feelings again.
Sure. Yeah, there's something to that, I think, for sure. You know, so, you know, one of my other lives, and I was a songwriter, I still write songs. And I wrote a lot of breakup songs, and, you know, the spiritual search was for the right boyfriend. And I finally learned, and one of my, you know, greatest spiritual lessons was breaking up with an ex that I was with for years. And it was it was the stuff of many Taylor Swift records. I just couldn't quite get past him. And kind of, you know, wanting to get past that breakup, I really, in my mind, really vilified him and started to kind of create this kind of narrative of like why he was so bad for me and why, you know, he was this and he was that. And that was actually really painful. to actually stay in that headspace was actually really, really painful. And I started to, you know, do a little more, you know, spiritual seeking and reading up and really just kind of maturing into this knowledge that, you know, many things can be true at once, right? Which I was kind of late to be honest. I'm a little bit of a late bloomer. Like, I could really love him, and also we were not supposed to be together, right? We were not right for each other. And actually just kind of surrendering to, I'm always going to love that guy a little bit, and it's really good that we're not together anymore, ultimately was so much less painful than being like, that guy was a jerk, you know? So I think there's something in that too. Like, this is really horrible right now, what we're going through. And there are some, you know, some silver linings in it, right? And, you know, I'm saying I don't want to be a bright sider, but something that's been really helpful for me is appreciative inquiry. Like, so appreciative inquiry is like, you're not just looking at things that are broken. You're looking at things that are good, right? It's different than gratitude for me. I think a gratitude practice sometimes is just a bridge too far. Do not tell me to keep a gratitude journal right now. No, I'm not doing it. I'm sorry, Oprah. I love you, but I'm not doing it. No. Right. But I can always tell you things that I just really love. Right. A Stevie Wonder record, a really good French press coffee. My puppy, you know, the smell of fresh cut grass. Those are things I really love. Right? So if I look at things that I really love and really appreciate, right, all of a sudden I can actually get to gratitude a little bit more easily. You know, when I'm feeling sorry for myself or I'm feeling hurt or traumatized by something that's happened. You know, I had a social worker approach me once when I was sitting in a chemo chair during my cancer treatment. And it was just, you know, not a good moment to approach me. And, you know, she's like, I noticed that you're crying. You cry during chemo. I've heard that you cry during chemo. And I was like, yeah, a couple times every chemo. It's like an 8-hour day. Every time I go for a chemo thing, a couple times I would cry. I would just kind of let it out. And sometimes it was crying because I was, you know, mad or scared. And sometimes it was crying because I was grateful that I was going to make it, right? Because I knew that I was actually a lucky one with a fighting chance. But even, you know, the social worker was uncomfortable with me expressing my feelings. And so she gave me a gratitude journal. This might really help you not cry during chemo, to, you know, write down things you're grateful for. And it's, you know, there is a tension. This isn't a culture that really wants you to express your feelings, really. We value people expressing their opinions and their talent, but not necessarily their feelings. So
you're talking to a lifelong crier. I am one of those children starting at the earliest age that when I felt uncomfortable or frustrated or sad or scared, the tears would flow. And it was mortifying for many, many years. In many, many situations, they would prop up at very inopportune moments. And I think the challenge years was the societal, or what I perceived to be the societal interpretation of that, was she can't handle herself. Oh, sure. When in actuality, when those tears flew, I knew I was going to be okay, but they just needed to be there in that moment. One hypnotist I worked with rather recently said something to me, because I cried in this session. And she said, you do know that your tears are your body's release of tension. So like a volcano releases the lava, it is a very efficient way to move and detoxify challenging emotions. So every time you cry, you should be thanking yourself and thanking your body for so easily moving through the emotional cycle that you're in. And that really changed the way that I looked at my propensity to cry, because I do feel like I'm a very resilient and strong woman. And I never liked the feeling that the tears said otherwise.
Oh yeah. And, oh, yeah. You know, sorry, there's a little echo.
There's a little echo here.
You back? I think we lost your connection quickly.
Yeah, sorry.
I've got a
little echo.
A little echo that's making it tricky. My grandmother
used to say she was very comforting and very accepting. And if I, you know, stubbed my toe or skinned my knee and was crying, she never said, suck it up. She would, you know, kind of pat my back and say, better out than in. Better out than in. Like, let those out. Right? So, yeah, I think the tears, they do help you. You need them. You need to let them out.
I agree with that. One of the things that always interests me in something that you said early on in this conversation was about how to be a good support system for someone going through a tough time. And you mentioned that you decided to take your U-turn out of the world of TV commercials and into the world of being a chaplain after walking through your cancer journey. So can you talk a little bit about how we as humans can be better listeners and better support people to folks that are having a hard time right now?
Yeah, I mean, I really think I might have just gone to chaplaincy school just to learn how to really listen, honestly. I think, as you know, in a creative field and in advertising, you're really paid to respond and be quick on your feet and have a point of view and answers and, you know, snappy comebacks and one-liners. You know, if you've been in a client meeting and you're presenting work, you're kind of ready and anticipating their questions and their feedback, right? It's just kind of a different, it's just a different way of listening. You're kind of listening and waiting to talk in some ways. Although I think the best creatives are really good listeners. But so I had these careers of really performing and expressing, but not listening as much. And I wanted to be a better listener. And that's what, you know, my cancer experience taught me, is that, you know, really well-intentioned people don't really want to listen because they're uncomfortable with discomfort. Are uncomfortable with uncertainty and uncomfortable with pain and suffering. You know, we want to look away. We don't want to watch the George Floyd video, right? We want to watch other things. And that's, we want to look away. And I wanted to be able to be someone that could look directly at suffering and sit with the suffering. And I think that's the biggest thing. I think we're all called really to be chaplain to one another. I think anyone can can be a chaplain in many ways if they can listen. And, you know, empathic listening is really just listening and not waiting to respond. Just listening to what someone says and really taking it in, not offering advice, not trying to fix anything. Just listening and saying, I hear you. I'm sorry you're going through this, and I'm with you. And that's one of the most powerful, healing and helpful things I've ever been on the receiving end of in any struggles. A chaplain sitting next to me and just saying, how are you doing? And then really listening when I say, it's not good. I'm not good. Here's why. And it's, you know, I think we, again, it gets back to the bypass, spiritual bypassing and, you know, kind of the oppression of positivity culture. Right? We don't want to vent, right? But there's a difference between venting, I think, And also, I think venting is important. Speaking of volcanoes, right? You got to vent or else you might just blow your top. But I think there's something really important in sharing what's really going on and having someone to witness and to be a dedicated listener. And we can't always do it. Like, we can't always do it with our partners or our coworkers or our kids, because we've got to, like, we've got stuff to do. And, you know, we're busy people. But if there's times and moments when you can just be that listener, you know, it's important. So I really think it's really simple in some ways. Just listen.
One of the events or places that you worked when you were in chaplaincy school, which I remember some of the conversations when you were leaving your job in those days, was a prison. And you worked with the residents there and sat in circle and acted like their listener and their spiritual teacher in some ways. Can you talk a little bit about some of the lessons that you learned about spirituality working in the Correctional Institute?
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel really lucky that I got the chance to do that. You know, it was part of my internship and field practice for chaplaincy school was this opportunity to go in every week to a reentry center for men in the last year and a half of multi-year sentences, and men who are had earned their way into this program and applied to be in this program and had earned some work release privileges, many of them in various stages of addiction recovery, you know, from, you know, age, I think, 20 to 70. It's like all ages. And I got to go in there as a chaplaincy intern and student. And I wasn't sure what to expect, but they had requested some sort of spiritual programming every week. So I called it Vespers, which is usually at night. Vespers is usually just, you know, music and readings from scripture. But I'm an interfaith chaplain. I'm spiritual and not religious. And, you know, the call in a correctional facility is to be interfaith and non-denominational. And so I got a chance to go in on Friday mornings. I always took a box of coffee from Dunkin' with me and some munchkins and a boombox. And we would sit in this little windowless, you know, basement room at the reentry center and sit in a circle. And I mean, they were every bit as, I don't think I was a teacher. I think we were chaplaining each other in many ways. And we would just, you know, share what spirituality meant to us, what makes us feel connected to something greater than ourselves, what makes us feel isolated or damaged or lost, what helps us feel found. And it was really incredible. And I just felt this real sense of being able to just be myself. There's something really freeing. There's just not as much, I'm having trouble not swearing, but there's not as much BS. There's like just a real rawness and realness to what the residents shared and the way they shared. And all this, also, for as hard as that environment is, this real vulnerability and openness to trying things and, you know, reading Mary Oliver poems and, you know, singing Motown songs together and writing haikus. And it was just all ways into understanding each other's stories and into relationship. And it was pretty, probably one of the most rewarding and meaningful experiences of my life.
Did you find any common patterns within this group of how they were overcoming really challenging life events and circumstances that ended them up in that situation and how they were getting through it to grab onto something potentially bigger or brighter?
Yeah, I mean, I know vulnerability is really having a moment, right? Vulnerability, the brand, but that's it right there. This willingness to be vulnerable, this willingness to be open to new ideas, new experiences, and practicing empathy, right? We sometimes think about empathy as this thing you either have or you don't, right? Or you're good at or you're not. I personally think it's a capacity we're all born with, and it's also a practice. And, you know, I think week over week, I think a lot of the residents do a great job in this program. They have a really successful, a great success rate. But I think some of the real standouts were actively practicing more connecting and connective ways of being in relationship with people. Right. So, yeah, I would say vulnerability and a focus on relationship and honesty.
How do you think we can practice stronger connections in the time of COVID when most of the country is still in, you know, some semblance of isolation? We're not going to our offices. Many children are not going to their schools or having the regular play dates. And, you know, if you're an older person or you have aging parents, you're probably not seeing them either at all or with the same regularity that you're used to or the same kind of proximity. How do we find connection in a time when the universe is sort of disconnecting us?
That's a good question. I'm definitely struggling with that. You know, I'm a little more extroverted than is great in this lockdown time, and I do tire of Zoom video calls.
Zoom fatigue, it's a real thing.
I got Zoom fatigue, and I mean, I think there's something to just starting small. You know, small is all, and it's just like picking up the phone. Remember phones? Remember phone cords? Remember hamburger phones, right?
Yes.
Just like
I'm not too much of a millennial to not know phones. I prefer a phone call than consistent texting. Like that just is too much for me.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, and you're a friend that you actually pick up the phone when I call at weird times just to be like, hey, did you see this thing? You know,
I am a phone picker upper. I am.
Yeah,
I am.
It's like great. And now everybody that listens to this will know. Sorry.
Yeah.
But they'll know who you're screening. But I think it's just smaller, just taking little smaller things, and little small things kind of add up. You know, I think we can get sort of ahead of ourselves and feel like, you know, it has to be a whole thing. It has to be a social distancing date where we pack a picnic and we're 6 feet away and we go to this thing. And I really think it's more mundane than that. It's picking up the phone a few more times. It's letting someone know you're thinking about them. It's, you know, sending them a song, right? Hey, heard a song, made me think of this time we did that thing, right? It's kind of like, think about the 90s. What do we do in the 90s?
Mixtape.
Right?
Maybe a mixtape.
I'm still like a Spotify playlist person.
Yep.
You know, like, and songs have this way of like, you know, cutting through space and time and, you know, disconnection. And actually that brings me back to the chaplaincy work at the reentry center. We listen to music every week. And speaking of the 90s, I mean, do you remember when you used to get a record and read the lyrics on the album art while you listened?
Yeah.
I am still that child of the 80s and the 90s. And so I would bring a song every week and print the lyrics out. And we would listen and look at the lyrics and dissect it like it was like a sacred text, which I think it is, right? And that was kind of our scripture. What do you get from this? How does this make you feel? What comes up for you spiritually when you hear the song? And one of the songs that we kept coming back to that they requested every week was Creedence, Have You Ever Seen the Rain? And
great song.
Great song. And, you know, when I got ready, when my internship came to an end, and at the same time that some of the guys were getting ready to graduate, we sang that one last time, and we kind of decided that was going to be our call signal, right? And so that if you, because you will hear that song all the time, right? You'll be filling up your gas tank somewhere or at a Dunkin' or, you know, at Whole Foods, and it will come on over the loudspeakers. Just wait. Now that I've told you this, you will hear it everywhere. And, you know, we're in this kind of rarefied, not really rarefied, in this prison industrial complex, but in this weird environment, we're very close in close quarters and in this really unique situation. And then we're all going to scatter to the wind. All these guys are going back to different communities, different, you know, journeys. They're not even really supposed to hang out after they graduate, right? We just kind of go our separate ways. But what we shared in those times together was really meaningful and valuable, right? So we kind of made this pact that if we ever heard, "Have you ever seen the rain?" out in the world, we would take a second and send each other love.
Oh, that's interesting. I love that.
So that's kind of like our call signal. So, you know, every time we heard it, we kind of made this agreement that we would send each other love and light and strength and courage to anyone that had been through that program and anyone struggling. So
I love that.
So,
well, there's maybe our momentum tip for today of finding your theme song that can get you through these hard moments and bring you out the other side.
Yeah, and it can be a different song every day. I was just going to say, you know, I do a thing. You know, I'm sure they don't teach this at Harvard Divinity School, but I'm calling it 3-minute church. And if I can remember to do it, I have a much better day and next day. And it's just checking in with myself. How do I feel? What's going on for me? And asking my kind of mental shuffle, like what comes up, and it will come up in the kind of the form of a song, you know, right? This morning it was "Love's in Need of Love" today, right? Stevie Wonder song. And that's kind of what came up for me. And then just listening to that song and really listening to it, really feeling it, singing along, maybe moving, but not just putting it on as background noise, right? Really listening to it, almost like you watch a movie. And just giving myself that 3 minutes of complete permission to just really immerse myself in a song and what the feeling of that song is and how it connects to how I'm feeling. So that's my 3-minute church.
And I think you're onto something. I know we've talked about a future announcement that's coming on what your next sort of spiritual project is for people that want to be able to celebrate from home. So if people want to get the update when you're ready to talk about your next project, how can they follow you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram as Reverend_Jess, Reverend Jess, and also on Facebook. It's Jess Tardy Music. Like, clearly I'm still a multi-hyphenate. I'm also on LinkedIn as an associate creative director. And I'm really happy that I'm working as associate creative director for the primary agency right now, which is a great ad agency that specializes in telling the stories of places and properties and destinations. And it's just really interesting and rewarding work with a cool team of collaborators, which is great. And so I'm going to continue to be, you know, have a bunch of slashes on my business card, you know, ad creative, chaplain, singer, songwriter. So I've got some stuff coming up soon. I'm releasing my first single in 6 years.
Awesome.
Which will be on Spotify and anywhere online where there's music. And I'm going to keep keeping it weird.
The world needs more of your music. So not only can you get Jess's music on Spotify, where this podcast will also be, but I would imagine you have some pretty incredible playlists. Do you ever make those public?
I do, actually. I have some playlists. Like, I got all kinds of playlists.
Yeah, I think I need one of your playlists. I feel like that would be a really good morning meditation jam for me.
I actually have the playlist from the Reentry Center too. All the songs that were kind of our little hymnal for humanity, and it's, you know, none of it's
I love that.
None of it's church music either. But it was.
But that makes it better, I would argue, that you connect with people. I mean, some people find traditional church hymns relaxing, and some folks find mainstream music with the right lyrics to wake them up more. So I think it's all about finding the jam that works for you.
Whatever works for you. It's create your own, you know, spiritual adventure, and that's all okay.
Well, I have some sense of what's coming from you. So I think that people should follow Jess to watch as this unfolds. And I can't wait to hear your new single. And I thank you. I feel like I went to church today on a Friday. I feel more centered and more grounded and more relaxed after speaking to you. So I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for not letting me get out of this. I appreciate it.
Yep. No. Momentum meant taking that step forward, and you did it well.
You're good.
All right, Jess. Thank you. And next week, Friday at 1 on Momentum Magnet, we'll be talking to CEO Rich Worgan about how you are able to create your own recovery from a difficult disease. He has founded Curare Disease, which is a nonprofit drug company using CRISPR therapeutics to treat muscular dystrophy. So that will be a great conversation next Friday. And until then, thanks everyone. Have a great weekend.